Blog Talk Radio.
All the laws and legislation in the world will never heal this world like the loving hearts and arms of mothers and fathers. You know, if every child could drift to sleep feeling wrapped in the love of their family and God's love, this world would be a far more gentle and better place. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the ocean and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Look here. I'm talking about America.
She's here for your country. She's here for your state. She's here for your family. She's your voice against the erosion of your culture. Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your culture vigilante, Miss Lisa Payne Nager. She's here for you.
Good Wednesday evening to you. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your culture vigilante hour. We're all going to band together this hour and find out what we can do together to help take back our government. We have a lot of things lined up for you tonight, a lot of things that you can do to get active and involved, and we are right on the heels of the election. We're almost there. We're so close. I can taste it. I'm so tired of it. We will do our obligatory recap of the debates last night because I kind of think we have to. Everybody's probably tired of it. It's 24 hours past the debate time just about, and I think it's all probably been beaten to death. I don't think that it was the big blowout that maybe people were kind of expecting or kind of looking forward to, but you just, you know, I don't think it went badly. I think it went very well. With us tonight to help us discuss and digest that information is our own Dave Court, Mr. Hour of Truth. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. It's always my pleasure to be with you.
So, Dave, tell me, what was your take on the debate?
I call it a draw. Fortunately for us. And actually, a draw is pretty good because Romney was fighting, as we knew he would, and he will in the next one, against both the moderator and the president. So I think he did well with a draw. And unfortunately for Barack Obama, he needed a heck of a lot more than a draw to make any difference, I believe.
Well, I don't think Barack's ever going to do well in these debates. I think you saw what you were going to see out of him last night. I think that was probably his best deal, and I don't think he performed very well. I think Romney came out a little bit ahead. I don't think it was the home run that he hit the first time around. I don't know how much money Barack spent on consultants and coaches. I don't think it helped him out that much. I don't think he looked that good. I was not impressed. I think it was a little bit more reserved and a little more polished, but I'll tell you that my favorite part of the debate was when Romney went after him on the pension issue, and he stood toe-to-toe with him, and Barack was squirming. He couldn't look him in the eye. He couldn't answer him. He stuttered. He didn't know how. It was an uncomfortable situation for him. You could tell he just wanted to turn around and run, and there was nowhere for him to go, and Romney kept pounding him on, you know, have you looked at your pension? Have you looked at your pension? And he nailed him on it, and I thought that was great. What did you think of that?
I thought that was good. I thought that was excellent. I thought that Barack was a lot more polished than he was last time. I don't necessarily think Romney hit a home run last time. I think it looked awful good because Obama struck out.
Yeah, because Obama looked so bad.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Romney is always going to look like Romney. And if he continues to look like Romney, I think he gets at least a draw, and I think that's good enough. But he's never going to be exciting. He's never going to inspire.
No, he's not a Reagan.
Exactly. But I think that all he's got to do is know his facts. All he's got to do is talk over and over and over again about the last 4 years to people who are hurting as a result of the last 4 years, and I think he can't lose.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. What is the guy's name? Frank Luntz. He's on Hannity.
Oh, yeah.
And he does the polling the people polling and I was watching that. That was, I always loved to watch that after the debate, because surprisingly enough, and I didn't really, I mean, I thought Romney did okay, and I thought Obama did okay, you know, for what I expected to see. But I was very surprised to see the huge reaction of support going over to Romney from previous Obama supporters in that focus group. Same thing that happened last week. Huge support going over to Romney from Obama people in the past.
And I don't find that surprising at all. I mean, I believe we forecasted that 6 months ago, Lisa.
Well, I do too. But to me, I mean, just based on the debate performance, I just thought it was a lackluster debate. It didn't just thrill me to my socks, you know. And it seemed to really make a huge impression on the people that were in the focus group. So I was just kind of surprised by that reaction.
See, I wasn't surprised by it, but I don't think I'm not thinking that those switchovers came as a result of the debate. I think those people were almost there, at least, if not already there, and just were waiting to come down in front of the congregation and make the announcement to actually hear that Romney had some promise for them.
Yeah, I tend to think that's probably true. You know, I think people have been living the lie for the last, you know, half
there
of the Obama administration, and they're just done with it. They're kind of tired of it.
And the election season has put a cap on it, because, I mean, like we've said, like you and I said several weeks ago, you know, the president can do a press conference once every 3 months, but you know, when he's out there every day with TV ads professing the lie, and with a debate a week professing the lie, and out there just day after day, stump after stump, professing the lie to people who are living the lie, he just can't get away with it.
Yeah. Speaking of living the lie, I had a tip from my friends at Reboot Congress today. There was a story on the Missouri Records blog this afternoon. It landed in my mailbox, and they brought it to my attention at Reboot Congress. We've all heard in the last few days, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, that there are some issues with McCaskill's husband receiving $300 million in stimulus money and tax credit money. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about it, yes.
Well, it would seem that this story in the Missouri Record blog is alluding that there may be more to come. And let me just kind of read a little bit of that to you. Let's see. McCaskill's husband, Joseph Shepherd, reports that and there are reports that he received $40 million in stimulus spending, but there may be more. But that may be the proverbial tip of the iceberg. Investigators are uncovering hundreds of millions in dollars in tax credits that were received by Shepherd and his hundreds of business entities. And it goes on to explain what tax credits are, and we all know what they are, good or bad. They're basically an enticement to businesses to come here to Missouri and set up shop under circumstances that they wouldn't ordinarily do so. So, and the story goes on to say, in Shepherd's case, the net value of tax credits and the myriad of companies and addresses that collected them is so vast that it's difficult to defend them.
Wow.
Interesting, huh? So
I'm kind of getting
the whisper in my ear from my friends at Reboot Congress that there may be more to come on this story, and go to Reboot Congress maybe tomorrow or the next couple of days and take a look and see if something pops up, because they are working on this story, and they've done a great – Reboot Congress has always done a great job of uncovering these interesting little hidden facts that go on in Missouri politics. So we're going to try to hopefully get them on next week if we can, but we know that – pretty sure the story is going to develop over the next few days, so let's kind of keep an eye on that one.
Yep, and we need to do some story developing. That's for sure.
Well, you know, Claire, I mean, you know, if it's an airplane, it's tax credits, it's stimulus. I mean, it's something with her all the time. So, you know, it's voting with Obama. It's you know, I don't know. I can't believe people are actually going to vote for that woman. I just can't believe it. You know, regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum, you know, I mean, it's just, I can't believe they're going to vote for her.
Right.
And that's even a question. It's just, you know, we've gotten so
crazy
far afield. Yeah. Okay. We've got a pretty full plate tonight. We've got a lot of things going on. We have, let's see, where do we want to go from here? Well, let's just talk about our lineup tonight. Okay, we've got some interesting people to talk to tonight. Not only have we got some funny business developing with Claire in Missouri, just when you thought Guantanamo issue was dead forever and we were about to get out of the Obama administration without reliving the Guantanamo Bay closure, we have Bev Pearlson from Illinois. She's got some new information about a study that's being released after the November election has passed, ordered by our friends in Washington, D.C. They're trying to reopen that issue of bringing Guantanamo prisoners into the United States and right next door in Illinois. And so Bev Pearlson's going to give us some information on that. And our good friend Usama Dakdok will be with us a little later on. And he's got a great breakdown of that video that supposedly caused all the issues in the Middle East. He can give us some insight into how that is or is not really the real situation and pull some truths out of it and dispel some of the lies. And we'll look forward to talking to him. And later on in the hour, Lauren Maloney, our friend from Commuter Patriots, is going to be on with us. He's a proponent for Amendment 3. That's the bill about selecting the judges. The Missouri plan issue, changing the Missouri plan. Lauren is a proponent of that bill. I'm not really sure where the rest of us fall on that. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. A lot of us are looking at that bill like it's a coin toss. And there are some good things about it and there are some bad things about it. I'm hearing whispers that there are maybe some more bad things about it than we originally thought. So we'll explore that as we go by. But Lauren's going to give us the proponent side of it tonight. And then, of course, we will wrap up with some updates on the Save Our Sheriff campaign and some of the issues going on in St. Charles County. But let's take a break, and we'll come back in a few minutes.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. And we are just full of information for you tonight, and we are looking forward to the election winding up here in a few weeks. We hope that you've found a way to contribute to your favorite candidate and to help some campaigns along the way. If you have the opportunity to sign up for polling for your issue or for your candidate, please do so. There's no shortage of volunteers that are needed in any of the candidate races or any of the issues going on. So do everything that you can to get active and involved. We're assuming that everybody's registered to vote. The deadline to do that was the 10th of October. I put up a story earlier yesterday, actually, on Examiner.com. St. Charles County is experiencing an extremely high early voter turnout this year, much higher than in 2008. If there's a need for you to vote early in your precinct or your county, contact your county election authority and make sure that gets done so that maybe you can work the polls on election day. And go to examiner.com and read that story. Interesting philosophy that there may be just a huge voter turnout. If early voter turnout is happening in your county, that'd be kind of nice to know. Let us know how that's working out for you. I kind of have a tendency to think that may be a trend, and there's a reason why. Well, let's get right into it. I was forwarded an article not too long ago last week by my friends at Spirit of Resistance. And there's, you know, we all kind of thought maybe this Guantanamo thing was dead. There was a lot of resistance to closing Guantanamo Bay after Obama got elected. That was one of his campaign promises. And, you know, the House and the Senate kind of put some roadblocks up and, you know, we're 4 years later and it's not closed. Well, from what I understand, there has been a study commissioned by our folks. I think it was Barb Feinstein. Commissioned a study, and the study is due to be released just several days after the November election. So it kind of makes you worry about what could happen in that lame duck session. And we have with us tonight Bev Pearlson. Bev Pearlson is a Blue Star mom. She's the mom of a military man, I believe a Marine. And she has been following this issue for quite some time. She's from Illinois. She's our next door neighbor. And from what I understand from her, and we'll get the details from her, they're trying to bring those Guantanamo prisoners, those detainees, into Illinois. So, good evening, Bev. Thank you. Oops, let's make sure she's on. Thank you for being with us tonight. We're glad to have you on.
Hi, Lisa. I'm here.
Did I have that right? You're a Blue Star mom.
No, I am a Blue Star mom, but my son served in the 82nd Airborne, which is out of Fort Bragg. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. And you have a blog that you put all of this information on called thebandofmothers.com.
Right. And it's a website. It's not really a blog. I mean, I do a lot, you know, and I post what I'm doing, where I'm going to be. And, of course, always just support the troops. You know, that's what the Band of Mothers is all about.
So tell me, what motivated you to go down this road, Bev?
You know, a lot of people look at Code Pink, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with Code Pink. They're an anti-war nutcase group that dress up in pink. Lately, they're running around in pink vaginas, but anyway,
right.
You know, that's the big women's thing, you know. But between them and Cindy Sheehan, I was sitting in my living room back in 2007, and I saw Cindy Sheehan down at George Bush's ranch, you know, holding signs calling our soldiers the terrorists. And you know what? All of a sudden, I remembered when I was 13 years old and my brother was serving as a Marine in Vietnam. And I remembered seeing Bill Ayers and all of them just, you know, burning the country down and, you know, putting bombs out on windowsills, blowing up policemen and, you know, just wreaking havoc on America because they were mad about the war. And I thought to myself then, you know, you're not going to do to my son what you did to my brother back during Vietnam. So I looked at my husband and I said, our lives are going to change right now forever until this war is over, because I'm not going to sit in the living room and watch them do to Johnny what they did to my brother. So I literally left my living room. And what I did was I put in for a permit to go stand on the Cannon Building corner, which is in the same building where Pelosi sits. And I won't say that she works in there. I don't. She just, you know, wreaks havoc. That's what Nancy Pelosi does, you know.
And collects a big paycheck.
Paycheck. And at that time, she was burning up a whole lot of fuel. You know, I love these global warming people and all these energy people. But that lady burned more gas in her tenure as Speaker of the House than you and I will in our lifetime on that big jet that she was flying back and forth from D.C. to California. It was unbelievable. I actually had calculated out one time how many gallons of gas and how much money she costed the taxpayers with that nonsense, you know. But anyway, I would go stand on the Cannon Building corner and hold signs supporting our troops. And I remember the first time I did it, I was by myself, and my husband was like, you can't go to stand there by yourself. Well, yes, I can, and yes, I did. And you know, it's the word got around. And, gosh, you know, I would go stand on the corner, and I'd bring my little chair, and I'd put a my CD player on there, and I found out Nancy does not like patriotic music. So I brought a bullhorn, and I found every beautiful patriotic song I could find, and I put them all on CDs, and I would put them, you know, the bullhorn up to the CD player, and I would blast the patriotic music. And, you know, I had a permit, and I had included on the permit that I would have a bullhorn and a CD player with me. So I became very good friends with the Capitol Police. In fact, by the end of the first day, the Capitol policeman who stands on that corner and who has been there for 30 years comes over and he says to me, can you turn that up a little? And I'm like, why? And he's like, you see those cops across the street? They're loving it, but they want you to turn it up. And I said, okay. So needless to say, I mean, I did that over the course from like 2007. I've done it maybe 9-10 times.
Oh, Bev, we liked your spunk. We need you here at Missouri Grassroots. That's
and
awesome.
if you go on my website and go to the after action reports, you can read about all the times we spent on the corner. We had some exciting times. But I will say this, you know, I believe that we were very successful in shutting down the anti-war people. They didn't get away with what they did during my brother's era when he served in Vietnam. They didn't get away with it this time. We didn't let them because there were so many of us in the military support, you know, groups that just all right. came together. It was wonderful, you know. And you know, they wanted to – Nancy and her criminals up there wanted to cut funding on my son. I remember he was on his second deployment. And they were going to cut funding on them. Well, then I really got upset. So I made a lot of trips up there and lobbied a lot. You know, we walked a lot. We covered a lot of ground. And we succeeded. They never succeeded in cutting funding on them.
Excellent. That's excellent. I mean, that is the best example I can think of taking charge of the situation. And people can make a difference. So when you were on the street corner, how were you alone for very long there or were you joined by others?
I mean, it was like the second day people had heard there's this lady standing on the corner holding these signs, you know. And, you know, every day it was like there were more and more people coming. So, you know, I mean, you can't be afraid to go do mm-hmm. something like that. You just have to go do it. And it's like, you know, feel the dreams, build it, and they will come. They do.
That's,
you know?
Absolutely.
So after that first time, I never stood by myself. Never.
Okay. Good for you. Good for you. Well, and you're still causing quite a stir. Tell us a little bit about this. You've been all over the place talking about this situation with the Guantanamo Bay, you know, the closure of Guantanamo Bay, and the fact that they're trying to bring these detainees, these terrorists, into Illinois.
Well, if you remember, one of Obama's first executive orders was to close Gitmo. So 2 years ago, they're pushing. Dick Durbin is his, you know, he does a lot of Obama's dirty work, and he does. And, you know, we've got this prison here in Illinois. Now, that prison was built back in, I think, 2001 and has sat empty. Cost the taxpayers in the state of Illinois $140 million, and it has virtually sat empty. So they had the bright idea, you know, because Obama's from here and this is Durbin State and we've got Governor Quinn and they're all just, they just all love each other so much and they're just so corrupt and criminal. And so they got together and said, hey, you know, we've got this prison in Illinois. Why don't we move the Gitmo detainees to Thompson Prison? Well, when I heard about it, let me tell you what, nothing stirred my heart more than that the thought of my son who served 4 deployments to keep the terrorists away from our shores, and now these morons think they're going to bring the worst of the worst terrorists right here into this state. So I got, needless to say, I got upset. I started making phone calls. I started reaching out to people. Went on Fox a couple times. But to you know, I was very fortunate. You know, I'd been up to D.C. a lot. I've got some good connections. And the next thing I know, the people in Michigan got a hold of me. Congressman Pete Hoekstra got a hold of me. Now, Pete at that time was sitting in Congress, and he also sat on the House Intelligence Committee. I'll tell you what, to your listeners out there, if you got a couple of bucks, throw them toward Pete Hoekstra for Senate in Michigan. He has to win that Senate seat. And it will be good for all of us if he does, because this man is fearless when it comes to fighting and, you know, for our safety and keeping the terrorists off these shores and out of Illinois. But the bright idea at first, see, was to put the Gitmo detainees in a prison in Standish, Michigan. And that's when Pete Hoekstra got involved in it. Well, they were promising those people in Michigan, oh, you're going to have 1,100 jobs and it's going to bring all these jobs to the community. That's a lie. Anybody that's looked at all the studies on prisons, and there's tons of them, they don't create a lot of revenue in a community. I mean, we have 4 prisons sitting empty right now besides Thompson that are waiting for activation. Well, wait a second. If it's true that they create all this revenue, why are those prisons empty? Mm-hmm. Because they don't. And here's the other lie that they told the people in Michigan. Oh, it's going to create all these local jobs. Not true. Mm-mm. Not true. They were going to make that a federal prison. That would create federal jobs. When Pete got done doing all of his research and the people there in Michigan, the bottom line basically was, you know, maybe if they were lucky, they might get 100 jobs. And that was stretching it. Local jobs. So it was a big lie. It's always a big lie about these Gitmo detainees. Whatever they got to tell people to get them here, that's what they're trying to do.
And, so anyway, those prisons sit empty because there are no criminals in them from your area either.
Oh, well, that's a whole other avenue to go down.
Right.
But long story short, I mean, 2 years ago, so when it didn't go over in Standish, Michigan, because Pete Hoekstra and those people there fought them, Durbin stepped up and said, oh, wait, we got Thompson Prison here in Illinois. We'll put him there. Well, you know, when I got wind of it, luckily for me, Pete Hoekstra and I talked, and he was wonderful. I mean, he gave me so much valuable information, you know, about the lies that were being told, basically, and how dangerous these terrorists are. I mean, these are the worst of the worst terrorists that are in Gitmo. He also put me in touch with a great, great lieutenant colonel. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Gordon Kukulia. He wrote a book called Inside Gitmo. Everybody should read that book. And I actually, you know, got to email with him a few times, and he, you know, explained to me about what they're really like in Gitmo and how you don't want them in this country. So, you know, I mean, we fought them, and we managed to, there was a General Assembly hearing in here in December of that year, and believe it or not, we loaded the auditorium where that assembly was held. It was standing room only, and that auditorium holds like 750 people. There were at least 800 people there. And they were 800 angry, mad Illinois taxpayers. And we even had people come from Michigan to help us. We had people come from Iowa to stand with us. It was a united front. And, you know, I testified at the assembly. Some other patriots came. Debbie Lee, she's a Gold Star mother. She came all the way from Arizona, which, you know, in December, Arizona's nice and warm. But here it's freezing. And my husband and I called Debbie. I said, look, you know, we'll fly you here if you'll come and testify at the hearing, because Debbie's been to Gitmo. So her testimony was invaluable. And we ended up winning. What happened there was we got so much press, and everybody across the country said, no way, no way. Democrats, Republicans said, no, you're not bringing them here. So we won. So, you know, I knew, and Congressman Hoekstra had said to me, if you think, you know, just because we won this battle, they're going to revisit this well again. And now here we are this year, right? Now they decide, oh, we'll kind of sneak it in there, you know. Well, God bless Congressman Frank Wolf. He's from Virginia. He was holding the purse strings on that money to buy, you know, to actually for the feds to buy Thompson. And he told them, you're not getting the money. Well, so
okay.
What does Barack Obama do when he doesn't get his way? He defies the Constitution. He defies the written laws. He defies the rules of law. And he gets his way. And that's what he did. He went to Eric Holder and he said, you know what? I know you got some money there in the Justice Department for prisons. I want you to release that money, and we're going to buy the prison. So here we are now.
Okay, so let's outline a little bit the difference between a maximum security prison inside the United States and the maximum security prison in Guantanamo Bay. It's a huge difference. And the kinds of prisoners that you house in Guantanamo Bay versus the kinds of prisoners that are housed in a maximum security prison inside the continental U.S.
Well, that's a really good point, and one of the points that we made in I forget, Matt Murphy was his name. He's a senator from Illinois. You know, I knew everything there was to know about the security situation. But I was very proud of Matt Murphy because, you know, all of these Democrats in that assembly kept saying, but you know what? What's the big deal? Because we've got terrorists here in the United States right now sitting in prisons. The point is, no, you don't have the terrorists that we have at Gitmo. None of those people, none of those terrorists are like the terrorists we're housing here right now. They're just not. And, you know, as far as Gitmo, let's just talk about that. People need to understand, we, the taxpayers, have spent $500 million building that prison and securing that. It is the most secure place to hold terrorists on the face of this earth. Why would anybody in their right mind want to vacate that $500 million taxpayer-funded prison and move them here now? Who would do something like that?
Yeah, and the laws, I mean, once you bring a Guantanamo prisoner into the United States, I mean, the laws that bring those people in or how they are prosecuted and how they're handled, that changes once they come onto American soil. Isn't that right?
Yes, it changes. And, you know, one of the things that Durbin and Quinn said when they announced that, you know, the feds were going to purchase Thompson Prison, they said, well, you know, Durbin said, well, there's treaties that we've all signed that says we cannot house these kind of prisoners in a prison like Thompson. Well, okay, because right now Thompson is not a military prison. But like Pete Hoekstra said to me, I hope nobody's fooled by that, because once the feds buy Thompson Prison, they can make it whatever they want to make it.
Yes, absolutely.
And let me tell you how I know. I'm already getting the feeling. Because, all right, and now here's another thing. Taxpayers spent $140 million to build Thompson Prison. That has sat empty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now all the taxpayers, so now Illinois is getting hit twice with this boondoggle idea, but now everybody's going to spend $165 million to buy Thompson Prison, right?
Right.
I mean, add these numbers up.
Double money.
Oh, my God, it's so absurd. And then I saw something Durbin said the other day. Oh, this is so, this infuriates me. Now we have to get some appropriated money to bring Thompson up to the standards. Well, in other words, I think what he's really saying is now we need to bring it up to a real maximum security prison so that we can get it ready to bring those warm and fuzzy little terrorists here to Illinois, right?
And that's not going to cost anything.
Oh,
I mean, so,
let me
yeah.
tell you, this is the other that's very frightening about Thompson Prison that a lot of people don't understand. Thompson Prison, it's a frightening thing. And, you know, when I first got involved with it, I hadn't been to Thompson. And, you know, this made national news. This made world news. Everybody in the whole world was watching this story. And I didn't really realize that until I get a call from a Belgium news crew. And this lady called me up, and she's like, Mrs. Pearlson, we want to come and interview you. And we're from Belgium. And I said, you came from Belgium? And she said, yes, we've come from Belgium. She said, the whole world is watching this. We can't believe your president is going to do this. So she asked me if she said, would you mind driving up to Thompson to meet us out in front of the prison? And I said, sure, you know. So my husband and I drove up there, and, you know, this is a frightening place. People should just take a ride by this place. But we did, and as we, you know, got into the town there, and it's actually Sterling where the prison is, we pull in, and there's just a few little businesses, so we stopped, you know, and we had time, and we went in and talked to some of the shopkeepers. And I said, you know, how are you feeling about the worst of the worst terrorists coming to your little town here? Oh, honey, it'll be just fine. We've got it covered. Don't worry about a thing.
Sure,
oh
they do.
Sure, okay, we traveled on down, and we pull up to the prison, and the proximity of that prison to the town is frightening in itself. It's so close. But when I got out of my car and I looked at the landmass from the road the prison sits on, which isn't far from the town, and the actual prison itself, there is no way to secure that prison. The landmass just isn't there. Now,
we're talking about people who fly planes into buildings. You know, these are worldwide terrorists, you know, from the Middle East.
Absolutely.
These are not, I mean, you know, having murderers and rapists and the likes of that in your town is scary enough. This is something on a whole nother level. And if there's not that kind of security, I mean, I would want a body of water or a mountain range or something in between me and my family and that prison,
Well, let me tell you, it gets scarier because the prison itself, it backs up to a very busy highway called Highway 84, and it also sits on the Mississippi River. But running behind the prison and between the prison itself and Highway 84 is a railroad track. And guess what rolls down those railroad tracks? Those railroad tracks deliver the most dangerous chemicals. That's what rolls on those tracks.
Oh, my
God. And they're delivering chemicals to Archer, Daniels Midland, 3M Corporation, Equistar, IPSCO. There's a couple other, you know, big corporations there. But let me give you a list of some of the chemicals. And I found out about this from a fellow by the name of Walter who lives up there. And when Walter heard what was going on, God bless this man, but he called me. He's like, Mrs. Pearlson, you got to listen to me. You got to tell these people. So he provided me with a list of the chemicals that roll down those tracks, ammonia in multiple forms, nitrogen, methyl alcohol, coal, liquid propane. Isn't that lovely? Liquid propane and chlorine. Now, if you think about that, you know,
I think my house would be on the market tomorrow if I lived.
This is great stuff for a terrorist, the terrorist that turned a plane into a bomb, right? But could you imagine? This is actually providing a bomb rolling down a railroad track, courtesy of the United States government, right? Now, so let's just say somebody were to trip those tracks. And all of those chemicals start spilling all over. What do we have to do? We have to evacuate the prison, right? Well, wouldn't that just be lovely?
Wouldn't that just be convenient? Okay.
And you know what? All those people in that town, God help them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Bev, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Oh,
you're
welcome.
Is there something that we can do to help the effort along? Is there a website we can visit? Is there somebody we can call, letters we can write? What can we do to help?
Well, right now I think we're in a good place because I think Romney's going to win.
Right. We hope.
If Romney doesn't win, then I'll be back in touch with you. But I'm feeling a landslide coming. I really am.
Okay. Well, in the event that we have a, you know, I mean, hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to contact you through your website?
Oh, yeah. You can email me through my website, thebandofmothers.com.
Okay. We appreciate your time tonight, Bev. We hope you'll come back and give us an update. Thanks so much,
Lisa.
And thank your son for his service.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and speak to our friend Usama Daktok, and he's going to give us another perspective on that movie that was circulating through the Internet that caused all the problems in the Middle East.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Currently, 4 St. Louis City citizens are appointed by the governor to serve as St. Louis police commissioners, along with the mayor of St. Louis, which goes back to the Metropolitan Police Bill of March 1861. The St. Louis Police Department constituted the largest quasi-military organization in the state at that time, and the police bill was a Civil War measure passed by people who wanted to control it as part of the Civil War. Every now and then, there is a call to abolish the St. Louis Board of Police Commissioners and give control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department to the mayor's office. The newest effort to take away citizens' control is on the November 6th ballot as Proposition A, and has been orchestrated by the powerful police union and the mayor's office. A no vote on Proposition A will continue to allow citizens' commissioners to hire, fire, and establish rules for St. Louis City police officers. A yes vote on Proposition A, citizens would lose their ability to administer the police department, which would revert to the mayor and his city democratic political machine. For the betterment of the citizens and the St. Louis Police Department, it should be free of political corruption and continue to be managed by the citizens at large. We urge a no vote on November 6th on Proposition A. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over,
When you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's right. She's back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. There couldn't be a better lead-in for our next guest, Usama Dakdok, who's here to talk to us tonight about the movie that caused all the problems, the video movie, the YouTube movie that blew up the Middle East, that sparked the murder of our embassy ambassadors and our Marines over there. It's the root of all evil. It's about the movie, and you know, the president said so, and it took him 2 weeks to figure out that it wasn't the movie. So, you know, everything's under control. Usama, my friend, welcome back.
Hello, my dear sister. How are you? You make me laugh. That is a movie which caused all the trouble in the Middle East. I think the people in the Middle East have seen much better argument, a much better material, which we have broadcast live on the TV all over the Middle East in Arabic and in English for the last 7 years. And nothing happened. I was speaking to Sean Hannity on his show a few weeks ago, and I have the privilege to talk with him for 9 minutes, believe it or not. And I told Sean, 35 years ago, before there was even any movie or any talk on the internet or the whatever the technology we have today, Muslims were shouting in the mosque across the street from my church, "Death to America and death to Israel," before there was any movie. The problem is, my dear sister, that we have in America liberal who are willing to lie to make an excuse for whatever Muslim do, and we have American people in general who are unaware, or the right word which I always love to use is ignorant of Islam, and they will try to find any excuse. Even Bob, up to this evening, 5 o'clock, the 5 show on Fox News, Bob is saying, "Yeah, the movie have something to do." Maybe he's asking, "What do you think causes the people to be mad and angry?" I said, "No, it's not the movie. It is the word of Allah in the Quran. It is the command of Muhammad in the Hadith. That's why Muslim has been always, since he exists 1400 years ago until today, hate Muslim, hate Christian, hate Jews, hate anyone and everyone who does not believe in Islam. Have nothing to do with Bush, have nothing to do with America. Before there was America, Muslim hated Christian and Jew. Even right. When Muhammad lived in his small town in Saudi Arabia."
So you'd pretty much have to be living under a rock to have believed that it was the movie that caused the death of our ambassador.
Not just a rock. You might as well be in a coma. Because if you're living under the rock, you figure out that it has nothing to do with the movie. I mean, I don't think living has to do anything with believing this life. And you know what? You know what's amazing, Lisa, about all the whole situation here? It's until today, Muslims benefit from this movie. No kidding. Do you know that Muslims benefit from the first September 11, 11 years ago? They benefit from it in America.
So how does that work? How does it? What do you mean benefit by that? Does it just it kind of emboldens them?
Listen,
it charges them up?
I can give you numbers. You'll be shocked. Do you know that since September 11, the first September 11, which is 11 years ago until today, Islam is spreading in America to be the loving, peaceful religion because Bush told the American people we're not in war with Islam. Islam is a loving, peaceful religion. I mean, when you have September 11 in America and 3,000 plus Americans were killed in a few minutes, and then you get your politician with the stupidity of political correctness speaking about that Islam is a loving, peaceful religion. I can let you hear the Vice President, Cheney, Bush, Condoleezza Rice, everybody in Bush and administration spoke highly of Islam and of Muslim, and they said, just we're going to hunt and we're going to go on war against the radical Muslim. See, inventing the word radical Muslim and the other word moderate Muslim is a benefit for the Muslim. And how did the world start learning about radical Muslim and moderate Muslim? It started after September 11, as Bush, the first president, lied to the American people. Now we got Obama continue to lie. So what, these people in Libya did this something bad there, you know, kill 4 Americans and the burning of the flag all over the world. It must be because we insulted Muhammad. We insulted Islam. Therefore, we're going to give them millions of dollars. I mean, $450 million to Egypt, and all these things are going to be sent to them. We're about to send 4 stealth warships, which cost us $2 billion, our tax money, to Egypt. Why are we doing that? Because they have benefit from a lie spread by Obama. The Muhammad movie have nothing to do with what's happening around the world. Add to that, Lisa, add to that. If you go online to our website, thestraightway.org, or go to YouTube and just type Revealing the Truth Behind the Muhammad Movie. Revealing the Truth mm-hmm. Behind the Muhammad Movie. And it's actually, it's also on Facebook. It's all over. We have many people carry it, which sadly, in my own YouTube, I only have 2,000 people watch it. But if you go to other sites, they already have 1 million people watch it because nobody knows who I am anyway. But if you go and watch my video, you will learn that nothing in this movie is not true. I mean, when we say Muhammad have multiple wives, when we say Christians are persecuted, when we say Christians are forced to confess to crimes they did not commit, when we say Muhammad was a pedophile, when we say Muhammad was a womanizer, when we say Muhammad was an adulterer, when we say Muhammad was a thief, when we say Muhammad is a killer, when we say Islam is a religion, have nothing to do with tolerance, when we all these 20 segments we have in this 14-plus minute trailer. By the way, this trailer is a joke because it's a poor quality of camera, sound, light, acting. It's very poor. But the message in every second in this movie is true. And how do I know it's true? I opened the Quran, my dear sister. I opened the hadith. I opened the interpretation of Muslim scholars to the verses of the Quran. And that's what we did in our video. It's 2-hour video. It's fun to listen to it. And I promise you, you'll come out and say, wait a minute, where is the insult here? We are,
okay.
See, here is another benefit, Lisa, because we're telling the world we're insulting Muhammad. No, we told the truth in
mm-hmm.
a simple words about Muhammad, the wicked, barbaric, child molester, sex offender, prophet, pretender, womanizer, thief, killer, name it, Muhammad, the prophet of Islam. And so
okay. I want to make sure that I am going to post it. Usama has put together a documentary dissecting dissecting this video that has been the firestorm of controversy around the world and that supposedly set off the firestorm of all of the issues going on, the blow up in the Middle East. He's taken this and he's dissected it and he's put together the information about what's true and what's not. And you've also written a book too, Usama. You've got your latest book out is a translation of the Quran. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. The Jewish Quran is the first true accurate English translation. And by the way, our new book coming up within a few weeks from now here, The Revelation of Error, which was you go in depth into the Quran to show to our dear Muslim friends and to show the Americans this Quran is nothing but a dumb counterfeit to the Bible. Literally, it's nothing but a dumb counterfeit to the Bible. The problem with you, Sister Lisa, and all these wonderful listeners who listen to us, the problem is we do not know hardly anything about Muhammad. We do not know anything about Islam. Or somebody say, wait a minute, how dare you tell me that Muhammad is a pedophile? That is insulting to the Prophet of Islam. I said, wonderful. You tell me, 51-year-old man married to a 6-year-old child. As a matter of fact, if you time it in our American timing here, the 12 months year, 365 days, she was actually 5.5 years old. A 6-year-old child to a 51-year-old husband, what do you call this? Marriage made in heaven? Or you call him a sex offender, a prophet, a pretender? Of course. So because American people don't know, so wait a minute, another piece of the video, Muhammad commit adultery. How dare you are to tell me Muhammad commit adultery? He insulted Islam. He insulted the Prophet of Islam. I say, wait a minute. Why not we open the Quran, chapter 66 and verse 1, and read what Allah said. O you Prophet, why do you forbid what Allah has made lawful to you, seeking to please your wives? Okay, let's read the interpretation of Muslim scholar. What did Muhammad forbid himself? Oh, he will tell you, Asaba Muhammad Mary al-Qatiyah. Muhammad have sex with Mary, the Coptic woman, at his wife Hafsa, in her bed, on her night, and she saw them together. He said, please don't tell Aisha. Please don't tell Aisha. Lower your voice, as we see it in the movie. And then he said, I swear by Allah, I will never have sex with this young lady again. I swear by Allah. And then Muhammad, later, he want to have sex with her. He want to marry her. So Allah release him. Allah relieve him from his oath. And he said, why do you forbid what I made lawful to you, seeking to please your wife? Therefore, Muhammad was able to have sex with her again. Where do we see Muhammad in the Quran? A womanizer. It's very simple. You go to Quran chapter 63 and verse 50, where Allah gave him a list of every female living and dead. Literally, Muhammad had sex with his dead aunt after she died. Can you imagine that? Muhammad in the Quran, chapter 63, verse 50, by the way, they were trying to pass a law in Egypt last year about allowing men, Muslim men, in Egypt in the year 2011, for heaven's sake. Just last year. They were trying to pass a law for Muslim men to be able to have sex, with their dead wife up to 6 hours after she died. Can you imagine a man have a wife, she died, 6 hours later will take her clothes off and have sex with her again? I mean, how wicked this be. And these are the legislators. These are the new people whom Obama bragging about democracy in Egypt. Now we have new Congress in Egypt who's going to pass law. What is the law they're going to pass? Bring the age of marriage to 6 years old, because Muhammad have sex with a 6 year, married 6 years, therefore now Egyptian can marry younger children, because otherwise you're insulting Muhammad. Think about it, Lisa. If I tell you the marriage age in Egypt right now is 16 for the girls. Wait a minute, are you trying to tell me Muhammad was a child molester? He married 6 and had sex with her when she was 9? And by the way, if you go to the Quran, chapter 65, verse 4, you'll see that Allah gave Muslims the right to marry children and have sex with them before the first period, I mean, when they're third children who have not yet begun menstruation. This is how sick Islam is. But the problem is, Americans do not know the Quran.
And that's absolutely it. That's what all of this boils down to, Osama. And you travel the country trying to educate the American culture about what the Islamic culture really is,
let me put this in a different word. I don't want to say culture. I say cult. Islam is not a cult. Yes, America here, we have culture in America, and we have faith in America, and we have different beliefs. But Islam is not just culture. It is a cult. And as I was sharing with you, when we see that Allah in the Quran, tell Muhammad, chapter 33, verse 50, O you prophet, if a believing woman offer herself to you, can you imagine that? A believing woman offer herself to Muhammad sexually. If the prophet desires to have sex with her, this is a privilege for you alone, that there will not be shame on your part. So everything you can imagine in this movie, Muslim, if, you know, I did this on our radio broadcast in Block Talk Radio, and we did it for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and I begged one Muslim to come to our show and tell me which part of the movie he thinks it is insulting to Muhammad. And I will do this anytime. It's going to be on VCY. It starts next week. You can listen to us on VCYAmerican.org, VCYAmerican.org, every day at 12:30 for half hour. And it's going to be 16 programs. We record 16 programs. And I dared any Muslim to show me any section in the entire 14-minute trailer to show me, here is insult to Muhammad. And I will take him to his book, the Quran, his book, the Hadith, the interpretation of Muslim scholars and Muslim scholar books, and I will show him that nothing in this movie is a lie. And the sad thing, Lisa, is I wish these people, before they did this movie or this trailer, I wish they talked to me, because I know how Muslim will react to the movie. And I would say, before you mention anything, say, let's look at the Quran, chapter so-and-so and verse so-and-so. Let's read the interpretation of the great Muslim scholar Al-Qurtubi or Ibn Kathir or whatever. Or let's read this in the book of this. And then go ahead, do the play, or do the drama and put in the bottom, Quran chapter 5, verse 52. That's it. Why? Because Muslim cannot argue with you. As a matter of fact, they will pretend that this movie is not there. Because if you talk about it, they will insult themselves. We did not insult Muhammad, Lisa. Muhammad insulted himself of his teaching and of his action, of his way of life. This is a very insulting man. I'm sorry to say that.
Okay. Osama has put together a fantastic, it's almost 2 hours, it's a two-hour YouTube video. I'm going to post it up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and we'll put it on the Facebook page as well so that you have a chance to take a look at that video. I'm sure it's up at Straightway Ministries, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's straightway.org. It's available on our website as well. We have it there on the front page and our home page, thestraightway.org. You can just go on YouTube and search for Revealing the Truth Behind the Muhammad Movie. And please, share it with your friends. I want everybody to know, because that's another opportunity for the American people to know the truth about Muhammad. And I guarantee you, this this film will die and we will not benefit from it, but Muslims will benefit from it. Let me give you another benefit, Lisa. You know
okay.
how Muslims are going to benefit from this as well here in America? They will convince our legislators to pass a law in America. Anyone and everyone who speak against Muhammad, who insult Islam, must be arrested and put in jail. I will be in prison someday for talking about this movie in some church or in some radio program like we have right now. So American Muslim will benefit from this movie, but we Christian, when we American, will not. For they will silence anyone who speaks against Islam under this so-called insulting Muhammad. I just have a friend of mine in Pakistan 3 days ago. He got arrested. And the excuse they got against him for being arrested is a pastor in Pakistan because they said he insulted Muhammad. You know, for heaven's sake. If you're in Egypt or in any Muslim country and somebody asks you, do you believe in Prophet Muhammad? You say no. Okay, that's insult to Muhammad. Literally.
Right. In order for Sharia to flourish, you have to stop the freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
You have to stop freedom of speech
in America, Muslims will never take over this country. They will take over this country when they silence us. They will take over this country when Obama takes the guns out of us. They will take over this country when we become just like Greece or some weak financially, economically. And that's what Obama will do in this country if he has 4 more years. We pray.
Absolutely.
We just
okay.
have to spend the next few days here.
All right, Usama, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to put that video up, as I said, at Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
Appreciate you. Thank
Go
you
to
so
Straightway
much.
Ministries. Look for the video. Look for Usama's translation of the Quran. And there's, I'm sure, if you've never had the opportunity to see Usama speak in public, this video is a great chance for you to get a chance to see him speak. And if he's in your area, jump on that opportunity to see Usama speak. He was in the St. Charles County area over September 11th, and he mesmerized the people here. They just love him, and we can't wait for him to come back. Thank you, Usama, for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you, sister. God bless you, and God bless your program here. Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a break again, and we're going to come back with Lauren from Commuter Patriots, and we're going to talk about Amendment 3. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is Missouri Grassroots Radio and your Culture Vigilante Hour. We've had an action-packed show so far, and we're not finished yet, folks. We've still got more to come, so hang with us. I think the ball game's over. Dave, are you out there? Is the ball game over?
No, it's still in delay. I'm sitting here just looking at my iPad. There's nothing on the TV. The TV has broken away and promised they would come back when the game resumes. So I'm going to guess that they're just either cleaning off the field or, you know, how these postseason things go. They may well be ready to go and just waiting for a convenient time to break into TV.
Okay. Yeah, because it is not raining here in St. Louis anymore. I'm out in Lake St. Louis, and I don't think we have any more rain. So maybe they're just cleaning stuff up and getting ready to go. So if we know anything, we will let you know before the show ends. Speaking of which, I kind of want to get back to the Missouri Grassroots Radio philanthropic project of the year, our Secret Santa project. We are more than halfway to our goal. We had a great fundraising week last week. We're not trying to raise that much money, and we're getting much closer to the holidays. What we're trying to do is pay off the layaway accounts of some families who've run up on hard times this year, and there are probably quite a few of those families, so that they can provide a nice Christmas for their kids and keep the magic and the spirit of Christmas alive one more year for their kids. So if you have an opportunity to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and hit that Secret Santa tab and send us just a few dollars, you know, $1, $3, $5, $10. We accept PayPal, check, money order. Just send us a few bucks. We're so close to reaching our goal, and every penny that is donated to Missouri Grassroots Coalition goes for this project. No one is paid here. We're all volunteers. We don't spend it on our overhead. We're going to do absolutely nothing with it except hit the Secret Santa project and pay off those layaway accounts. Dave, how close are we to meeting that goal? We're pretty close.
We're pretty close. We're a little over 3/4 of the way.
Okay, very good. So if you have an opportunity, just take a few minutes, folks. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and send us just a couple dollars. And with that, we're going to go right into our last segment tonight with Lauren Maloney of Commuter Patriots. We talked to Lauren a few weeks ago, and we introduced Commuter Patriots to you. He's the dynamo down there in Arnold, I believe, who's got the people all fired up, and they're standing on street corners waving signs and getting mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. So they've kind of taken matters in their own hands, and in Arnold, they're taking their government back. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for being with us.
Well, hi, Lisa, and you're absolutely right. We are definitely doing that in Arnold, and we do that every Saturday from noon till 2 o'clock at 141 and 6167. That's our rally, so come join us if you would.
Absolutely. It sounds like a great thing. It sounds very much like what we do here in St. Charles County with K&N, and that kind of thing is, as you heard earlier, if you listened to Bev Pearlson, standing on a street corner with a sign and maybe a bullhorn playing patriotic music attracts a lot of people, and it gets them fired up, And I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. We need to bring a lot of attention to a lot of these issues.
We're conducting referendums every Saturday. We have signs that say "Toot if you've had enough of Obama," and my goodness, the response is. Well, hearing is believing. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, are you disturbing the peace with all the car horns down there?
Yeah, we are. The cops come by all the time, but they're very patient, and we're exercising our First Amendment rights. But it does restore my faith in the American people, and we have a lot of fun while we're doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've really won them over when the cops drive by and toot their car horns, because they do that here in St. Charles County.
Yeah, I hear you.
We love them. Okay, so Lauren, I'm not sure we're going to be on the same side of this issue. For most people, it's a coin toss. Mm-hmm. Amendment 3, this Missouri plan, how are we going to choose our Supreme Court judges? It's a big damn mess. It's not working. People are not happy with it.
You're right about that, Lisa. It's not working, and people aren't happy with it, and I know why, and we'll get to that in a minute. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Okay, so really, that's it. I mean, there was a big push for a long time to find a way to change this, to bring a little bit, it's not a nonpartisan plan. They've been selling it as a nonpartisan plan, but they need to bring a little balance to it. There's no balance to it whatsoever, interesting enough for a judicial issue in the courts. So tell me why is it, Lauren, that you give me some background on it.
Sure.
And tell me why you support it.
Well, I often tell people, Lisa, that I know too much about the court system, and that's because I was a practicing lawyer in St. Louis for 22 plus years, as a matter of fact, and I'm familiar with all this, and I would like to start out just by describing for you what the current system is right now that we have, and that goes like this. The Missouri Bar Association, which is an association that all lawyers who practice in Missouri must belong to, it's mandatory, they select 3 finalist candidates for Missouri Supreme Court and Appeals Court judges, and then the Missouri governor must choose one. Now, the 3 that are presented, the governor can't say, no, those aren't people who are in the best interest of Missouri. No, those aren't the kind of people that I want to appoint. He simply must choose one. That's the way the law is right now. Now, where do these finalists come from? Well, Each finalist was voted there by the Judicial Selection Commission, which is composed of three non-lawyers, which are appointed by the governor, and three lawyers, which are elected by the Missouri Bar Association and the Chief Justice of the Missouri Supreme Court. Gee, that sounds pretty good, pretty impressive. What's wrong? Well, there are two kinds of problems here. One's minor and one's major. The minor problem first. Non-lawyer commissioners cannot compete in any way, shape, or form with seasoned lawyer commissioners because they do not have the necessary knowledge and experience. It's not even close. They're going to get out-argued every time, and I've seen it happen. And here's the major problem. Although this plan is called the nonpartisan court plan, it is not nonpartisan. Here's why. The Missouri Bar Association, who does all the screening and is responsible for the finalists and for the interviews, is highly partisan itself. Let me say that again. It's highly partisan itself. And therein lies the big problem. In my view, and as I say, I've got over 20 years of law practice in St. Louis, the Missouri Bar Association, which, by the way, I'm a member of, I'm a retired member now, but I still pay dues, they are controlled by two very liberal groups, the St. Louis Metropolitan Bar Association and the Missouri Trial Lawyers Association. Now, the Missouri Trial Lawyers Association is also known as Democratic Governor Nixon's Campaign Finance Committee. According to published reports, Missouri trial lawyers contribute more to Democrat Nixon's campaign than any other group. So the problem we have with the current so-called nonpartisan plan is that it most certainly is not nonpartisan. And by the way, Lisa, this is how Missouri, which, as you know, is generally a very conservative state, ends up with very, very liberal judges.
Right.
It's been happening like that for years. Now, what would Constitutional Amendment No. 3 do? Well, first, it would give the governor four, not three, appointed commissioners, which could be lawyers, and the Supreme Court judge plays no role. It would increase the number of approved finalists to four from three. And it's hoped, Lisa, that one of those four finalists that are approved by the Missouri Bar Association will be a conservative. Hasn't been in a long time, but it's hoped that with this change, that could happen. And it also changes the staggered terms of the commissioners, allowing the governor to appoint his four commissioners more rapidly. Now, these changes, you know, may not be perfect, but at least an elected conservative governor would have a chance to appoint a conservative judge on occasion, and these changes would somewhat level the liberal playing field. Lisa, my conclusion is that the so-called Missouri nonpartisan plan was originally hailed as a great system, back in 1940, that is, and was copied by several states. However, since then, many states have revised their plans to change important elements to address these very issues I'm talking about. Also, you've probably heard radio commercials urging you to vote no on Constitutional Amendment 3. Who do you think paid for them? Well, the same Missouri Bar Association, who would lose some power and possibly their nearly complete control of who gets appointed to judgeships in Missouri. The Missouri Bar Association pays for them. Pretty cozy.
Mm-hmm.
For all these reasons, Lisa, I recommend that your audience and all Missourians join me in voting yes for Constitutional Amendment 3.
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
Okay, first of all, earlier on when you were talking about the people that are running the Missouri Bar Association.
Sure.
It seems to be centered here in St. Louis. Does Kansas City not have any participation in this at all?
Well, sure. Well, first of all Kansas City lawyers are also members of the Missouri Bar Association. It just so happens that the St. Louis Bar Association, and in my opinion, and I want to emphasize this is my opinion, been there a long time, but in my opinion, the St. Louis Metropolitan Bar Association, mm-hmm, is the larger association of the two. between Kansas City and St. Louis, and they have very pointed agenda, and they team up very nicely with the Missouri trial lawyers.
Okay. So as attorneys are rising through the system and becoming, you know, appeals court judges and appellate court
mm-hmm.
judges and into the Supreme Courts and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Where are the conservative judges? I mean, since they're
mm-hmm.
being appointed in through this system, and the system is liberal itself, how do we know that any conservative judges are rising through these ranks to choose from?
In my opinion, they aren't. They aren't.
So
you know,
really,
the problem is the whole system's rigged. In my opinion, again, I speak for nobody here.
This is my opinion. I think we agree on that issue. It's kind of like the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the analogy I was thinking of. Yes, it is. And you know, the fact of the matter is that most of the conservatives, and this is going to be overly broad and sound really stupid, okay? But a lot of the conservative lawyers and members of the Bar Association are working so hard and so long, they don't really have time to show up at the St. Louis Metropolitan Bar Association. They really don't.
Right.
And so it's sort of a built-in precedent. But they cannot practice law in Missouri without belonging to the Missouri Bar Association. That doesn't mean they attend the meetings. For the most part, they don't.
If your kind isn't there to network with, I mean, you know, people kind of tend to network
right.
with their own kind, so there's not really room for conservatives in the Bar Association.
Yeah, now that's
really
not to say that couldn't be changed if you got all of the working conservative lawyers to all of a sudden go to these meetings. Do you follow what I mean?
Yeah.
But that realistically isn't going to happen. They're too busy. I mean, they pay the bar. They like me. They paid the Bar Association because they had to, or they couldn't practice law. That's how it works.
Sure.
And but if you're an aspiring judge, let me tell you what you got to do. Again, my opinion. You better be at every Missouri trial lawyer meeting. You better be at every St. Louis Bar Association meeting, and you better be at every Missouri Bar Association meeting. Because if you don't rub shoulders with the right people.
You're not going to
raise. You don't get there. And remember, the Bar Association controls everything here. Let me explain one more thing about how cozy the relationship is. It wasn't until about 6 or 7 years ago, I believe, that the interviews that the Missouri Bar Association was conducting with the people who were nominated for judgeships became public. That all used to be done behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only because some of the conservative people are saying, wait a minute, you know, what do you mean we can't attend the public can't attend the interviews, or we can't attend the interviews? That's not right. You're right. Some people are certainly not happy with the system. But since most people, the voters in Missouri, are not lawyers, I mean, I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense, but it has an impact on those same Missouri voters, and that's why it's going to be on the ballot.
And it's your contention. The reason that you support this is because this is just one more baby step into chipping away at the good old boy network here. If you can get, and assuming you can get a conservative governor, I mean, it's probably not going to work with Nixon in office, but
mm-hmm.
assuming that you can get a conservative governor in office.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, you put your finger on it.
Yeah. The people that a conservative governor would appoint would
right.
be more likely to put people on the commission that would appoint a conservative judge as a nominee.
And again, this is what I've heard about. You are so right. You probably don't realize it. Matt Blunt had to choose from three candidates that were liberal for the most part his entire term.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been some there certainly has been some problems in the legal community as a result of this. Other states have faced it, too. They've changed their laws. They've tweaked them. This is a small tweak is what it is.
Sure.
And it's a small change. But again, it's sort of a complicated issue, as you can see. But what it amounts to is you've got the fox guarding the chicken pen. You're right,
right.
In my opinion. And again, you know, my opinion and my opinion only, but certainly
this,
I'm a guy that's been there.
This tweak does also allow for the governor to appoint attorneys. He doesn't have to pick lay people. He can appoint attorneys, which might give us also part of the same problem that we've got now. And probably would happen under Nixon. Maybe not so under conservative, but it probably might happen under Nixon. We could speculate that.
Nixon, this system, even after you change it with Constitutional Amendment 3, assuming the voters want to do that, we'll find out. But even after you change it, it will not change the field such that Nixon couldn't appoint his people. He certainly can. The difference is Nixon can appoint his people now and always will be able to unless we change this law, and a Matt Blunt or a conservative won't. And that's why it appears. And so that's why I'm asking folks to join me in doing that. But I understand there are other opinions, and that's perfectly fine. That's what America is all about.
In my little fantasy land, is there ever any chance that in Missouri we could get a system that is more like the federal system where we have a vetting by the legislature?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, understand that it's very time-consuming. And it's expensive, and the federal system, what makes it work is once they've vetted a particular judge, that judge gets appointed for life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that makes me choke. I mean, 12-year terms for the Missouri Supreme Court.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Is tough enough, not life.
Right.
So, there's a way. The political influence, in my opinion, it's always been there. It always will be. And the way to approach it is how do you balance the political interests? Well, if you take it down to the very simple local level, if you've got something that politics could enter into, then you put together a commission that has, half one party, half the other party. I mean, and people have been doing that since the beginning of politicians, But that's not, that's just one possible approach to it. But it's not the total answer. I think this thing needs to be vetted and looked at by all kinds of people. And then, if we can get Constitutional Amendment 3 passed for now, that would patch it for a little while. But I think the overall system needs to be looked at.
Okay. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, I know that you've been working very hard on a voter guide there that you've,
yes.
The service that you provide to your commuter patriots, and it's going to be up at your website if it's not already.
Yes, and that it is a public service item, and it is up already. I'll tell you about it in just a minute, but it's public service actually to the public. And so they can go on our website, and you don't have to be a commuter patriot, patron, or organization, or leader, or anything like that. You can just go on, pick up the conservative voter guide, and go on. I invite your listeners to do just that, to visit our website, which is www.commuterpatriots.org, to review and print out copies of our conservative voter guides, which are now out. Now, those guides are located under the printable voter guide tab on the website. So you just go to the website. Up the top, you've got tabs. If you just hit printable voter guide, there they are. Now, these guides are written for conservative folks who have not been able to follow all the political news about the candidates and the issues on the ballot. And let me repeat that website. And, if your listeners would get something to write with, I'll do it one more time, too. The website is CommuterPatriots.org, that's CommuterPatriots.org. There's a guide for Jefferson County. There's another guide for St. Louis County. And there's another guide for St. Charles County. So if you want to know exactly what will be on your ballot, then print out the conservative voter guide for your county and take it to the polls. One last time, the website where you can get these documents is CommuterPatriots.org, CommuterPatriots.org. Thank you, Lisa.
We appreciate you, Lauren. Thank you for all the work that you do. We'll have you on again real soon to follow up on this issue.
It will be a delight. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, and to follow up with that, we're going to post Lauren's commuterpatriots.org guide on our MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We're going to put together our own voter guides here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and I think there are a few other voter guides floating around the Missouri area. We'd be happy to post those for you as well. Send them to us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and we'll put a compilation of everybody's guides together so that you can be informed and engaged when you get ready to go vote on November 6th. And speaking of voting on November 6th, kind of want to touch on some issues here in St. Charles County. We've been following this Save Our Sheriff campaign very closely along for the last several weeks. And the campaign has been they've really done a great job of developing their grassroots efforts here in St. Charles County. The sheriff's deputies are the ones who have actually organized this. These folks are not grassroots folks. They're sheriff's deputies, but they've pulled together a fabulous campaign. They have a great website with a lot of great information about the issue. They'll tell you just exactly what the issue is and why you should vote no. Vote no on this issue as well as also voting no on all of the other charter issues in St. Charles County. But absolutely vote no on this Save Our Sheriff's campaign. We don't want an appointed police chief in St. Charles County. We want to be able to vote for our sheriff. And there's also a Take Action tab that I urge you to go to, because they've done a great job in organizing some events and some things for you to do and help you get the word out to the community. What we've been finding, we've been going out in the community the last few weeks and passing out flyers, and we have yard signs and things and trying to tell people about what's going on. Most people don't know what it's all about. I mean, this thing was rushed through so fast and put on the ballot without any information going out to the public, that most people don't even know about it, and they wouldn't know about it until they get to the polls. So we have a lot of things there that we want you to do. We have some information for you to help us if you want to go door-to-door and just help educate the people in your neighborhood. There's some information there on the Take Action tab. We have door hangers and push cards and flyers. You can, if you don't want to go pick up some flyers or get some flyers delivered to you, you can go to the website and print off some flyers yourself. There's some PDF files there for you to pull off and take them to your Sunday family dinner, tell your family, tell your neighbors about that. We need volunteers. We need volunteers to help us go door to door. We need volunteers to help us work the polls. We need volunteers to do all kinds of things. Maybe call your neighbors, put some phone lists together, distribute signs. If you can host a meeting, we need your help with all of those things. We really need poll people. So it's always been proven. It's a great tactic that if you can have representation at your polling place, just holding a sign, telling people that you'd appreciate their vote as they go in, it's always a great, there's always a lot of success for your issue at that time. We have some upcoming events to tell you about. There's a tab under the Take Action tab. There's a Young Republicans meeting Thursday tomorrow night at Ham's Deli in St. Charles. O'Fallon Chamber of Commerce Legislative Luncheon is October 19th. They're having a mass lit drop in O'Fallon, and there's information there on October 27th. From 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and meeting up at the Burger King near K&N. And there are two more sine waves planned. There's a rush hour sine wave planned at the Cave Springs exit and Mexico Road from 5:30 to 7 p.m. It's a very busy exit. It will be a great chance for people to learn about this issue and to get some information about it, as see us out there with our signs as they go home. And Saturday afternoon, November 3rd, right before the election, we're going to be in Wentzville, right in front of the Schnucks on Wentzville Parkway. So if you have an opportunity, please join us out there. We'll have signs for you to take home. We'll have signs for you to wave. We'll have literature to hand out if you want to stop by and get some literature from us. And also, there's a letter-writing campaign tab on the website as well. They've done a great job of raising some money to get signs and literature, but they're not going to be able to raise enough money to do the extensive kind of advertising to get the folks educated on this issue as they need to. So go to the letter writing campaign tab on the website. There are links to all of the county council members. There are links to the county executive and the county sheriff for you to send them a letter and let them know exactly how you feel about this issue and that you don't appreciate this being rushed through so fast at the last minute and that you will be voting in opposition to it. And some of these people are up for re-election, so they maybe need to know that in advance. And also there are links to all of the patches, the St. Charles, O'Fallon, St. Peter's, Wentzville patch. There's links to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the Suburban Journal. Write a letter to the editor because it's the best advertising that we can get for the money that it's the best advertising money can buy, and it's the best advertising we can get so close to the election. So go to SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com, that's SaveOurSheriffDEPT.com, and get some information on that, and help us defeat this issue because this is one of those deals, folks, where it's the last bastion of freedom between you and your government is your sheriff's department. Don't let them take that away from you. And that's going to just about wrap it up for us this evening. I'm going to have to start running a little bit longer on our hour show is turning into a 2-hour show. I guess I'm talking too much. Tomorrow night, don't forget to join Kevin Harnard with his Hillbilly Logic. He'll be on tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And we'll be here Friday evening at 7 o'clock with our roundtable discussing the week's events, giving you some pre-election prep and post-debate rancor, anything else that we can come up with. And feel free to join us. Our number to call in for that night will be 347-677-1835. You're always welcome for the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. We're happy to have you. And on Monday nights, we have, of course, our Hour of Truth with Dave Court. Dave, who is so faithfully joins me here on Wednesday nights and runs my board for me because I am incompetent and I can't talk and run the board at the same time. And he's always providing great commentary. And since we've run out of time, we'll talk about some of the issues that we didn't get to tonight. We'll give you maybe the other side of the Amendment 3 issue and probably some of the ballot. We're going to deeply discuss the ballot initiatives that are on the ballot for November 6th. We've hit the Prop E ballot issue, probably beaten that one to death. But there are a lot of other things going on as well. Next week, we hope to have Ray Cuneo with us to talk some more about Agenda 21. Terry Herring will be on with us to sum up some of the ballot issues again in St. Charles County and St. Charles. And folks, we've hit the St. Charles County issues really hard because it's especially egregious what they've done to the people in St. Charles County with rushing through this power grab of charter changes at the last minute. But if something else is going on in your county, please get in touch with us. We want to be able to help you. We want to give you some airtime, and we want to give you some exposure so that everybody can find out what's going on in your government and give you some support. So give us a call or send us a line at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org and let us help you out. And hopefully we can have Bill Thacker on next week with us to talk about Gulen schools. We've been trying to work the logistics out on that one. But until then, we'll see you next week right here at 7 o'clock and for your Culture Vigilante Hour. Have a great evening. Go Cards.
God bless America, land.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check out our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.